This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com.
This is The Mainframe. Welcome back to our ongoing product series, everyone. Today, we're talking about product viability testing and iterations. How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm doing good. This is a fun one because people keep asking in Q&As and stuff, how do I know if my product's going to work? And do I have to spend all this time and money creating something only to find nobody wants to buy it?
Yeah, and the real answer is you don't until you start testing. I mean, you do a lot of research. You make sure that you have a good handle on your market. We've talked about that and covered that in the previous episodes. But ultimately, you have to get it out there and have people start using it before you can start to see if it's really going to have the impact and the results that you're looking for.
Yeah, and you don't know if it's going to be viable, really, until not only people have purchased it, but until you've got past that refund period, because it's one thing for people to want what you're selling. It's another thing for it to actually fit the purpose you're selling it for, right?
That's true. And you can start to demonstrate what it is that it does, and that's the kind of fulfilling that purpose. And the thing is, too, and remember, you get better at this, right? So once you've created a product and you've got it out there and tested, your next product, you're going to have a better handle on, you know, will this be successful out of the gate? I mean, you know, you see this all the time. I mean, we just, so Daredevil came out and it was, you know, people didn't know. I mean, I'm sure that they felt like it was going to be great, but, you know, they really didn't know. So it came out, everybody loved it. And of course, Jessica Jones was great. But now we're going into season two of Daredevil, and the Punisher is going to be in it with Jon Bernthal. So they've already talked about kicking him into his own series. So they're going to roll him out into his own series before it's even released. And it's because they got a good handle on what the Netflix our audience of the Marvel Cinematic Universe wants, you know? So now they've experimented and they've seen through two shows what is successful. So this time they're confident enough that they can go ahead and roll out Punisher without even seeing how the audience reacts first, right? That's kind of what you do as you expand. You start to learn the nuance of your own products and what would be working better than other things. And then you kind of roll that into each product going forward.
Yeah, and that's the Daredevil example's a really interesting one because, yes, it was based on a successful comic book series, and yes, they knew the ingredients to put into it to make the TV series successful, but those things don't always translate. And we can point to the DC back catalogue to see how sometimes they don't always translate very well. But they also knew from their Netflix data, they knew what people were watching. And I think that's crucial. You have to be observing what's worked in the past in a meaningful way, not just in a superficial, oh yeah, this sold well, but you need to really understand what your audience really responds to, what you're already doing that they really like, and what those ingredients mean. And you can do that using your content. You can do that by putting content out there and see what people respond to and see where the energy is. And I don't mean that in a sort of new age way. I mean, what gets people to react with activity? What takes something from being a passive, yeah, that was good, to an active registration, clicking on things, taking part, commenting, sharing. And then you know the raw ingredients that needs to go in. You know how people like to consume things. And you know what gets people excited.
Yeah, that's basically like a bench test, because what you're doing with your content is you're allowing your audience to see what it is that you're offering. And you're doing it in a way that's real. This is real time. You're putting out content, you're getting feedback, and you get to gauge where the enthusiasm is. And as Chris was saying, that energy, that enthusiasm for the product will be clear early on, and you can adjust accordingly. And it doesn't mean you necessarily have to adjust your product. If you've done your market research and you're pretty confident that the general product that you're putting together is a good, you know, a good entry to the market, the content is really to kind of look at ways that you can adjust the product as necessary. But really, we're talking about adjusting the launch and the offer to make it clear, right? Because really what you're trying to do is you've done your research, you've put your product together. You know the product is generally going to deliver the results you're looking for. You just need to know how you're going to position it so that you're making sure you're getting the right audience. And that's where the content's great for.
Yeah, there's some different stages with this. And as you said, knowing your audience is the big one. Then you can test with some content to see what they respond to. You know what their desires and their outcomes and their goals are. And then you can put a small seed launch together and you can see how people respond to that. Then you have to actually get people to purchase. And then there's the consumption phase. And really, the research, the content, the small launch, and people actually using it will teach you everything you need to know until you then go to the wider market. But there's a few things people overlook. And the research one is a big one that we keep talking about. And hopefully people get the message now. But one that I think we've seen a lot with the gurus and with a lot of people who are new to this is that whole concept of buyer's remorse, where they put so much emphasis on the sales process, the launch process, that they miss the part of actually having something that works, that people really like, and that people talk about in a good way. So you have to define what success means for you, right?
You do, and that's a really important point, because you can gather all this information and have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen, but then if you can't deliver it in a way that really meets the needs and expectations of the buyer, then you're going to encounter buyer's remorse. And you'll see this all the time with different products where they're trying to go for quantity over quality. So they put together something, they get it out there, and they're comfortable with a 50%, you know, return rate. They don't care because they're trying to get quantity, and you know, they oversell and, you know, misrepresent to a certain degree. And you know, this is sort of that old kind of slimy internet marketer approach. And, you know, there's people that still do it. I mean, there's entire, you know, industries, sub-industries of marketing online that's what they're after. They're comfortable with that. And that's fine. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about making sure that you temper the expectations of what you release and then adjust accordingly. Because ultimately what we're talking about is using your product to build a relationship. It's about building a community. It's about building an audience. It's about continuing to sell that product, but also having that buyer want to buy more products from you. So it's a long-term thing. So the key here is to avoid that buyer's remorse by not necessarily under-promising, but make sure you're not over-promising. And then take the feedback seriously so you can correct your mistakes. And it may not actually be real mistakes. It may have just been things you overlooked or ways you presented the product when really, you know, you'll hear this a lot where, you know, somebody purchased said, you know, I really thought I was getting this, but I got that instead. However, that I got is really good. I really enjoy this, although I wish you would have made that a little more clear. So those are the kind of things you can use to adjust, right? So we can make it real clear what it is that they're getting and you adjust accordingly.
Yeah. And that's why I like the MVP process, because they go in knowing that they're going to help you course correct. They go in knowing that you need their help and their feedback. And not everybody will be delighted every single time. I have taught a few classes at the local university, and I talked to the guy who was running the continuing education department, and I said to him, I dread feedback. I am really nervous about it. And he said, look, we could have Einstein in here, and he would still only get 70%, 80% maximum of people who are actually happy enough that they didn't ask for a refund, right? So there will always be somebody who is just not happy, and that's fine. You have to look for the real feedback. You have to look for the people who are actually giving you something constructive, or where you really did make a mistake, or where you really could improve. And the MVP process is perfect for that, because they've bought into that concept. When people really get upset is when you don't listen, and when you dismiss them, or when you've just done a bait and switch where you've completely misrepresented what you're selling. So there are things you can do beforehand, and there are definitely things you can do afterwards. And when you go in with the mindset that this is a process rather than a pass-fail, you're going to find it a lot easier.
Yeah, well, let's talk about some of the specific things that you can do and try as far as your testing when you're looking for the, you know, the viability of your product.
The Mainframe is brought to you by the Rainmaker Platform, the complete website solution for building your own online marketing and sales platform. Find out more and take a free 14-day test drive at rainmaker.fm/platform. Stop trying to hack together your website yourself. Head over to rainmaker.fm/platform today and get back to building your business.
So when we're talking about the different things you can do, one thing we've already talked about, but let's go into it a little bit more detail, is about your content. Using the content itself before the launch and then during the launch to better represent what the product is. And it's sort of a mini test. And a lot of times during the launch, it's almost like a live test using the content, right?
Yeah, and it's interesting how the content can lead you astray if you don't do it intentionally. Because it's not saying, I write about writing and my audience likes my content about writing, therefore I should do a writing course, because that's too vague. But what you can do is set up Q&As and they'll actually tell you what they want. Or you can do webinars about a specific topic. Or you can see which series had the best response. And during our podcast, you can look back and you can see how we had different series and we can say, okay, we got a lot of response about the MVP series. Maybe that's something we should talk about more. And when you iterate and when you go back and you see where you get the reactions, there will be topics and demand and there'll be goals that you key into that really get your audience excited. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they're willing to pay money, but you can filter out the other stuff for now and you can say, okay, this is where I'm going to concentrate, right?
That's true. And then you can kind of take that information and launch to a smaller group, like a seed group. Because we do this a lot. Sometimes we'll do internal launches. Sometimes we'll create early interest lists. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to create a small subset of people that kind of can become your core charter members, right? And it melds well with a MVP type approach.
Yeah, and that small group is probably going to be not representative in that they're super excited about this one thing rather than just vaguely interested. But it allows you to take this group to one side and make all your mistakes in private. And it allows you to have a small group that is contained so that you can actually communicate with them a lot more than you could with a massive list. And this small group will give you feedback. You can actually talk to them, get them on Skype, for example, do Google Hangouts, and really dig in. And if it doesn't work out, then you've not really risked anything. You haven't even risked any reputation because you've done an experiment. You've talked to these people. Presumably, you've made them happy in some satisfying way. And then you can go back to the drawing board.
Right. And you can use advertising to do the same thing where you're kind of advertising to a different, maybe an ancillary audience that's not directly to your own list or to a partner that you can work with in their list that might be close, but is not specifically your list that you're targeting, right? It's sort of a test bank.
Yeah. Apparently Tim Ferriss tested various book titles for when he did the 4-hour work week. And that's how he came up with 4-Hour Work Week. I think there was various drug-related titles that he was knocking around. And he used Google advertising to split test. And that's how he landed on that really cool title. You could argue that it was a little bit of a bait and switch. I think he's allowed some creative license. But a lot of people really found that 4-hour concept appealing. And that's how he had the success that he did. So Google advertising just to test your premise and your headline could be a good idea.
And then once you got all this together, I mean, really what we've talked about several times in this podcast and we talk about over and over again is the MVP, because that's really where you're testing. This is the testing rubber hits the road kind of thing, because it's a real deliverable product, because the most important thing to do is ship, but you have to ship something of quality. Remember, there's a saying that the word is ship, not something else, that we got to keep this not explicit. But the point is you need to deliver something of quality, but it doesn't have to be the full thing. And that's really what the MVP is. And it allows you to better gauge the reaction and the results, because you'll get feedback. And you need to make it clear that this is a you know, a charter group or a MVP or a pilot group so that everybody is on the same page about what they're getting. There are going to be people in your audience that are excited about being early adopters and understanding that they're going to offer that they need to be able to provide feedback. There may be things they don't like. There may be some minor things that don't work quite all the way there, or there may be features that it's not a full feature set yet. They understand this because they're willing to help you kind of shape the product, right?
Yeah, and they should be excited that they're part of that pilot group, because who else gets to steer the ship? Because later they're going to have the product delivered to them and they're not going to be able to change it. So that first group is in a privileged position. So they should enjoy that and get the most value out of it. And obviously, part of the implied promise is if it works out, then you're going to scale it from there. You're going to grow it and you're going to add to it. So they're getting the best deal. They're getting the early subset, knowing that they're going to get the full thing later on.
Yeah, and the great thing about taking this approach is you're getting the product into the hands of real people, people that have paid money. Now, that's why we like paid charter programs, MVPs, paid pilots. And we're not talking about beta testers. That's a separate thing. You can have a small group of beta testers that aren't paying for it. But using a paid group of people who have given you money, but a significant less amount than what the product will be ultimately costing them later down the road, or costing other people down the road, allows them to feel like they have skin in the game. And that's what's important about an MVP. You have your audience that is excited to be kind of part of this program. They've given you money, so they've actually paid for it. And they're going to get all the great features that you add later on. And as you scale it, because we've, as Chris said, you learn to scale from there. But as you scale it, they get that stuff. And if you do this right, they may never have to pay again. Or if it's a monthly fee, their monthly fee stays at that low initial price through the life of the product. And they keep getting better and better. So you're going to get good, solid feedback from that. And this is one of those win-win approaches, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to give them the results that they're asking for, because that's what we keep talking about in this entire series, is there's a pain point and you're trying to provide a solution to that pain point. So you're getting it in their hands, and then you're asking them, what else could this do? How else could this solve that pain point? And then you scale it, but you're scaling it in a way that is better directed by the market, because here's people that have paid for it and they understand. Now, the flip side of that is that you have to really start to gauge your feedback. And that's important, because, you may have three or four people asking for something, and they may be the vocal minority. They may be super loud and super complainy, but it may be something that ultimately is not going to help the larger audience. However, if you have, 10, 15, 30, 50 people all asking for the same thing, that's something you need to really consider. So you really need to track this, right, Chris? That's really how you scale properly, is tracking the features and requests and feedback in a way so you're getting the largest portion of the audience.
Yeah, you've got to find the real feedback. The first feedback you're going to get in a general sense is how many people get onto that interest list, how people join the waiting list is going to tell you if even the product is viable, and then how many people are willing to spend money. That's massive feedback, because the difference between saying they will and doing it can sometimes be a gulf. But then once people are in there, you need to pay attention where people really get stuck, where people find real missing pieces, where people find something doesn't work very well. And things that are broken, you can validate pretty well. Things that are a wish list is a lot more difficult. And the way we do it in our business is it's not just how many people are asking for it, it's how they ask, what they're trying to achieve, what the goal is. And sometimes it means talking to people and actually digging into it.
So when you're talking about, product testing and iteration, let's summarize here what we're doing. We're talking about, first, you can test with your content before you do the release and even during the launch. But using that content will get you a really good indication of if your product and your message about the product is on track. Then use the MVP process. When you release something and get it in the hands of your audience, your customers will tell you where that needs to go from there. And finally, consider using some type of advertising to do a split test of the types of things that the product is offering. This is a good way to get feedback from people outside of your main audience. So What we've learned is how to be successful, but that isn't always the case. Sometimes a product does fail, but failure is always an option, and that's important to remember. And we're going to talk about that in the next episode.